Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week you'll hear from conductor Randall Craig Fleischer about the holiday offerings from the San Francisco Symphony, including a live Charlie Brown Christmas and the Academy Award-nominated short film The Snowman, which will be performed with live orchestra. A couple of cast members will be on hand to enlighten us about this year's edition of Mittens and Mistletoe, a winter circus cabaret. And experimental sound artist Jassim Hindi tells us about the dance-based performance Future Friendships, which uses Arab futurism as its inspiration, for three performances only this weekend at Counterpulse. Peter Robinson will also share a review of the new Natalie Portman film Jackie, the Nutcracker production at San Francisco Ballet, and offers some holiday reflections. Stay with us. Well, a very timely interruption to the holiday fair is a collaboration with San Francisco-based performer Keith Hennessy and experimental sound artist Jassim Hindi called Future Friendships at Counterpulse in the Tenderloin. It's motivated by the ambivalent outcomes of the Arab Spring and a failed effort to understand the war in Syria. Keith Hennessy is an award-winning performer, choreographer, teacher, and organizer. He directs Circo Zero, a laboratory for live performance that plays with genre and expectation. Jassim Hindi is an artist based in Berlin whose usual materials are broken sounds, broken bodies, and broken texts. In the recent past years, he has been involved in a series of collectives and collective performances focusing on political strategies and odd objects in performance. He also gives workshops both in philosophy and about sound in performance. Keith and Jassim have a 5-year practice of friendship, art, and political engagement, an ongoing collaboration that has produced 2 internationally touring performance works, Almost and Turbulence. The New York Times has said Keith Hennessy and Jassim Hindi proved both passionate and tender, the 2 stage a defiant, poetic political work that gradually transforms chaos into hope. Jassim was kind enough to interrupt his rehearsal yesterday at Counterpulse to share his thoughts. I recorded him there.
A product of... Jassim, thanks again for taking a little bit of time out of the very busy rehearsal process in the creation of this amazing work.
Thank you.
You're calling this a product of Arab futurism. Could you tell me how that term first developed?
It developed parallel to this project. While we were creating this piece, I was also trying to assemble around me figures that I thought would be sort of the genealogy of what contemporary Arab futurism would be. It's basically a movement that I invented myself for myself and to project and share with fellow artists in the Middle East and everybody else. But of course it is also a joke because other people have started that movement in their own terms and with their own means. People that are my contemporary and about the same generation as me also. And I'm pretty sure that there are also past Arab futurist movement. I can imagine that with the birth of Afrofuturism in the Middle East, people were also inspired by that.
Part of this must be because the immediate future is hard to understand, let alone the present right now with all the turmoil that's happening.
Yes, it's extremely difficult to understand what is happening even if you follow the news very closely. So we are only the witness, basically, of a fire, and we're blinded by what is happening. There is no way to understand even the simplest thing, or a question like why were there several Arab Springs, what are their nature and how are they related to each other. This is not a question that we can actually answer. We don't know. We can have hypotheses, but we have no idea. We don't have the data. Parallel to that, there's also the idea that there's a great despair in the Middle East, and that we are, it's very hard for us to even imagine a future that would be hospitable to diversity and to just the basic humans, really. So following the Nigerian Afrofuturism, which was closer to cinema, one Nigerian author from Afrofuturism said that because it's impossible for us to actually project ourselves in the future, we have to change the rules, the laws of physics. So we have to make it completely fictional. And that's why futurism is often very much inspired by science fiction and speculative fiction, because we can make up our own rules.
And it's really art that's being born out of trauma, something as traumatic as a birth or as tragic as a senseless death from a drone strike.
Yes, yes, it is. However, there are recent traumas and past traumas. I mean, the Middle East has been at war for more than 70 years, I would say, to be very conservative. So it is more an idea of endurance. And the reason for the Arab Futurist movement, really, for me, is that I see secular culture disappear, because with extremism and with war, basically anything that is somewhat articulate or slightly more feathery or shimmering disappears. All the poets that are there, all the writers, all the thinkers, all the people that live a life that might be a bit hybrid, that cannot, it is not compatible with an archetype, disappear and completely melt away or leave. And when they leave, they also change their identity. So the idea is not that it's, the Arab Futurism is not a conservative movement. However, it is trying to embody those things and reuse them. So there is a bit of irreverence also in the way I use material, like, for instance, famous figures of the Nahda, the Renaissance movement of Arab literature. They were, normally you would use them with a lot of care, you would present them in a certain way that is a bit more academical, or, and I don't really need to do that or want to do that, because in the world that I am, these people need to be my allies and my friends, not just figures from the past.
Tell us a little bit about your personal journey then. You were born in Saudi Arabia. How does what's happening in Syria figure into your own life?
I consider the Middle East as one region. I am born in a family that has considered and is an embodiment of this Middle East as one big territory. From my father, my grandmother, my grandfather, and they all come from actually different countries in the Middle East. And it's just a question of accents sometimes and dialect, but it's very, very slight. So for me, in a way, we are one because we use the same language. Sorry, what was the question again?
Your connection to Syria and just the tragedy that's specifically there right now.
I mean, I lived in Syria, so of course there is that. There's a physicality to it, even if it was for a short time. I have and I had friends in Syria. I have found some and lost some. But again, there's this idea that Syria is part of the Middle East, so you don't need to be Syrian or in Syria to know about what's happening there. I mean, I lived in Lebanon, which was at war, and I came just after the war there, so yeah.
It's a much more refreshing view of being a citizen of the world rather than being a citizen of borders that are artificially defined.
Yes, this is what Nawal al-Sa'dawi used to say. She is a fantastic writer and thinker, and she always refused this idea of identity politics, that this is not something that the Arabs can completely relate to, and when they do, it's usually for very dangerous reasons. However, there is one thing that unites us is the practice of the Arabic language. And the confusion around it, and also how we lose it sometimes when we are in the diaspora.
You met Keith Hennessy in southern Mexico, Oaxaca. You've collaborated on a couple other things together. What inspired you to work specifically with Keith on this project?
Well, first, because I trust him as a friend and as an artist. And this project came somewhat naturally from our conversations. And it's not a subject that I proposed to Keith. We were sitting in a room, and what we do is to have this strange hospitality technique that whatever stays in the room for more than 2 days, it's not even a fixed rule, but let's say that if something stays in the room for more than 2 days, then it's going to be part of our work. We don't really select, we just hold on to things until they let us go or we let them go. And of course, Syria was on our mind, and this is something that saddened both of us, but also just the love for a complicated culture, basically.
So tell us about some of the visuals that we'll see.
One of them is a very big piece of fabric that, for me, makes me think of Arabic living rooms, where we have those very baroque couches everywhere. So there's a bit of this patchwork of how do you say, prints, right? Mm-hmm. And those flowers are, of course, very close to that. So that's a quite visual element, I would say. And we also are working with a fantastic light designer from Hamburg, Dennis Döscher, to whom we gave basically the freedom to do whatever he wanted, and was capable of creating very varied but very soft atmospheres. And I would say most of the pieces really just one atmosphere that slightly shifts from one to the other.
Some photography involved as well.
Yes, of course, there's this deck of cards, this is how we call it, which are pictures of people or drawings of imaginary animals that accompany us through the process. Some of them are real people, some of them are fake. Most of them have something to do with Arab futurism in a way or another, or with the wars in the Middle East.
And the music that we'll hear in this project, I heard a great degree of electronica, some experimental sounds that are made live in the room.
Yes. Initially, I'm a sound artist. I've worked with performance for a very long time, but always parallel to my practice as a sound artist. So this is something that we naturally integrated in the work, because Keith and I have been working like this for a long time. Also, we had a duet before. And most of it is basically around broken objects and broken sounds and field recordings.
In the end, are you looking at this as something that's therapeutic for you, or on a larger part educational for those that come, or a combination?
I'm very tempted to say neither. In a way, no.
That's okay.
We are not here to educate anyone. This is a platform for people to travel. It's a house in which you can move the objects as you wish, just with the practicing your imagination and projecting on us whatever you want. This is why objects are very important in this piece, and this is why the dances that we created are, in a way, very minimal, but also sort of childish, so that you feel that you're participating to the physicality. There is no idea of virtuosity that would separate us from the audience. That for us is very important, because it would be presumptuous for us to try to explain anything. If you want any explanation, you can read a book. Our role is really to just pass and share. That is all. Also, in face of the death and the horror that is happening in the Middle East, we have to be humble and be a little bit quiet, I would say.
I'm projecting a little bit of my own interpretation on the title, which is Future Friend/Ships. Perhaps is that to call attention to the difficult journey with the ship reference out of the Middle East for people that are facing a refugee crisis, or am I reading too much into that?
You are free to read everything you want. All interpretations are welcome, and I am not the author of your practice. So, of course, we chose a title that would be as ambivalent as possible, but also that would be, in a way, friendly and gentle. Friendship is a concept in philosophy that there's this idea of being in company of, rather than holding like in a marriage. So friendship is something that you decide and that you have to practice and maintain constantly. And it is also a political model into how to deal with other people and have enough distance, but also support. There is something, a friend who's actually a choreographer here in San Francisco, Larry Arrington, said one day this beautiful sentence that friendship is more queer than sex because you have to redefine everything constantly. So that's something that I'm very interested in.
Well, I thank you again for taking some time out of the rehearsal process, and it looks to be quite an amazing experience. Thank you for sharing it with me.
Thank you. Thank you for the interview.
When the madness of the peoples of the world knocks at the door, we go and open. A man has died in Beirut. A woman, too. It's their first night of rest in a long time. Oh, how cold is the ground in full summer when it is watered with absence. Absence, absence, absence.
Part of the soundscape of Jassim Hindi from his collaboration with Keith Hennessy. Three opportunities to hear that collaboration at Counterpulse on Turk Street in the Tenderloin tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 8 p.m. Information at counterpulse.org.
When we sing, we're not divided. When we dance, we are delighted. Alle Schwester, alle Brüder, Mischbucha. Und wir seinen alle Brüder und wir singen freilich Lieder. Alle Schwester, alle Brüder, Mischbucha.
Well, a slightly different atmosphere will prevail at Dance Mission Theater through the 31st as the Bay Area's homegrown Sweet Can Productions presents an intimate theatrical circus experience for the holidays with the 7th edition of Mittens and Mistletoe, a winter circus cabaret. Sure to astonish, charm, and entertain audiences of all ages. Here to talk about this year's innovative clowning circus feats and holiday hijinks are Beth Clark, who is one of a handful of women who perform on the slack rope and has studied it with two of the world's most renowned performers and has performed with several prominent groups, including our own beloved local Pickle Family Circus on the Discovery Channel and for Disney. She's one of the founders of Sweet Can. Welcome to you, Beth. Of course, and get the correct microphone moving here. Karen Quest was a cast member of the first Mittens and Mistletoe and trained at Dell'Arte School of Physical Theater, Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Clown College, and the San Francisco School of Circus Arts, where she is also an instructor. Karen, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Here we are. Where are we here? Now we're here. Wrong studio mics. Yeah, live radio. What do you do? So, who wants to give us a little bit of an overview of this year's show? I see a finger being pointed. To Beth.
Me. I do. I really, really, really do. Okay, we're so excited. This year, it's 7 years of Mittens and Mistletoe, as David already mentioned. And this year, we are going to the Wild West with Karen Quest and her Cowgirl Tricks, our beloved clowns Coventry and Calusa, Tristan Cunningham is joining us to create some crazy cowboy clowning. We have the amazing Clay Mazing, who is our musician playing the charango and bringing a lot of cowboy western sounds to our performance this year.
Nice. Looks like Coventry and Calusa have been doing this directing stint for 6 seasons now.
Yes, they have. In fact, it is due to the dedication of Coventry and Calusa,
that we're both having problems today with the English language.
And Mistletoe continues year after year.
Nice. And Karen, what is your contribution to this year's show?
Kooky cowgirl shenanigans.
Okay. That needs a definition, I think.
Trick roping, audience participation, and
hilarious cowgirl outfit.
Nice. Oh, yeah, the costume. I've got the best costumes.
So will some random audience member be lassoed, or will they be asked in advance?
You'll have to come see it.
At Dance Mission Theater on 24th Street at Mission. Preview next Wednesday with shows through the 31st. So every year is different with Mittens and Mistletoe, right? Things are mixed up a little bit.
Yes, exactly. We keep somewhat of the same premise, and we have some of the same performers returning year after year. And each year we invite new performers to be in our show. We think that it's important for families, people of all ages, to be able to come together at the holiday time, whichever holiday you celebrate, and have fun, be together, experience live performance, live music, be astounded by amazing physical feats, and harmonize together, clap together, laugh together, the whole gamut.
And for the whole family.
And then the wonderful thing about Dance Mission, it's a beautiful, intimate space, so a lot of circus is very, very far away, and this is right, almost close enough. I wouldn't say in your face, but close enough.
But there's a participatory element, which is nice.
Yes, there is. Every year we have different opportunities for certain members of the audience to come up and be in our show. There's many surprises throughout the show which can involve an audience member or not.
Well, there's a tease. What sort of? We need a little bit more of a tantalizing tease than that.
You want to know more about surprises?
It wouldn't be a surprise.
And
I will tell you this, though.
Well, you can tell us about the visual because this is radio, right?
There's always a raffle.
A raffle, okay.
There's a raffle. There's contests, which sometimes involve hula hooping. You'll have to come and check it out this year to see if that's true.
My downstairs neighbor is a hula hooper. I'm going to have to tell him about this.
Oh, word to the hula hoopers in our audience. We have the most amazing hula hooper, Natasha Calusa, super duper hula hooper, gracing our stage this year.
She hoops 50 hula hoops at the same time.
Are you serious?
I'm so serious.
There have to be parts of the body that one has never seen a hula hoop being hooped from.
See, now you're finding
now
surprises
I'm
too.
Myself.
Yes.
It's Beth Clark and Karen Quest of Mittens and Mistletoe. Now, this is billed as family fun, but I also noticed on the 30th, it's going to be an adults-only show. What's going to go on there? Can we get a little tease, so to speak, on what's going to happen on the 30th adult show?
I don't have a clue. Well, I really don't.
Will that cowgirl outfit come off?
No.
That would be an entirely different agreement with the audience if that was what was happening. That's not what's happening. Yes, we're just, you know, we're allowing ourselves to perhaps have jokes which would be different if every single age were in the audience. The timing of the show might be a little different.
Maybe those hula hoops will be on a differently clad body or partially clad body. We go that far?
I just want to say you have a vivid imagination.
This is radio. You have to have a vivid imagination.
Are we still waiting for an answer?
I want answers.
Okay. I'm going to venture to say that the costuming will not change from the 2 p.m., 4 p.m., and 8 p.m. shows.
All right.
There will be subtle adjustments to the content, which will be more appealing to adults.
Okay. You play with children one way, and you play with adults the other, another way.
True enough. Karen Quest and Beth Clark of Mittens and Mistletoe at Dance Mission Theater, 3316 24th at Mission. It's in preview next Wednesday with shows Thursday the 22nd through Saturday the 31st. Tell us a little bit more about the music that we'll be hearing. We heard a little bit of an intro music. That was quite fun. Ollie Breeder. I said that one perfectly.
It's okay. No one's counting. So because we are a cabaret show, each act brings its own flavor to the performance. And so there's a vast variety of the styles of music that will be in our show. As I mentioned before, we do have Clay Mazing, who will do a pre-show set of music on his charango, possibly his guitar and other things. We will also have a live accompaniment for the Slack Rope act this year, a beautiful arrangement of the song Hallelujah.
Nice. Let's back up a minute about the Slack Rope. What is a Slack Rope and why are you so good at it?
Oh, David. So a Slack Rope is like a tight rope, but it has no tension on it. So it hangs in a little U shape, a little smile shape. It is the precursor of the tightrope before there was tension to pull a rope across. People balanced on top of a rope in front of audiences around the world to bring joy and pleasure. And
should we give them the $100 word for the funambulist?
Yes, funambulist is somebody
funambulist.
Who walks on a rope.
I like that. F-U-N-A-M-B-U-L-I-S-T?
M.
It
is an M. Sorry.
I did win the spelling bee. Thank you very much.
There is an M in there, though.
Funambulist, from the French word funambule, for someone who walks on a wire.
Well, you're one of the best.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Beth Clark and Karen Quest, for coming in. Let's go out with some more of your music for Mittens and Mistletoe, When Sour Can't.
When disappointment rains. Scowling balloons crowd into the room. Put away that bin. You can send them to the moon with your honey grin. Sour can't, but sweet can, sweet can. Sour can't. Sweet can, sweet can. When the walls are plastered with headline disasters, talking heads and newscasters predicting more rain, don't go insane. Put some chocolate in your cup. Take a sip from downside up. Tarantella with a broom. While you sing a little tune, sweep away the gloom.
Music from Mittens and Mistletoe at Dance Mission Theater, 3316 24th Street. The 22nd through the 31st, with a preview next Wednesday. And be sure to get there early for the shows. There's a pre-show production. brownpapertickets.com or sweetcanproductions.com for more information. Holiday offerings resound through Davie Symphony Hall this month, including several conducted by my next guest. LA-based conductor Randall Craig Fleischer is music director and conductor of the Hudson Valley Philharmonic, Anchorage Symphony, and Youngstown Symphony, garnering critical praise for the musical development he's brought to each. He's also been a staff conductor for New York City Opera and assistant conductor for the National Symphony. The maestro is also highly regarded as a composer, especially in the area of symphonic rock and world fusion, and has worked with such artists as Natalie Merchant, Blondie, Annie DeFranco, John Cale of the Velvet Underground, Kenny Rogers, as well as with Native American artists R. Carlos Nakai and Burning Sky. In collaboration with his wife, comedian Heidi Joyce, he has co-authored several instructional pieces for children, which were premiered by the National Symphony Orchestra, including three rap pieces for orchestra, which are working their way into the standard repertoire. He's here in San Francisco with the San Francisco Symphony for some holiday fare. In fact, fresh from last night's Cirque de la Symphonie holiday show, Maestro, welcome to Open Air.
Maybe fresh is a little bit of a stretch. It's too early in this run of shows to be tired, but
I don't know how you do it with the three balls in the air of the main symphonies that
literally,
you're
doing. Literally, exactly. It's going to be a lot, but I'm so excited. These are such wonderful shows. I mean, I'm working with Ruthie Ann. You know, she's a Tony-winning star, phenomenal talent.
That's
great voice.
Ruthie Ann Miles, who will be featured along with the Pacific Boy Choir for
exactly.
both of these performances.
She's born in Hawaii, so she's also going to do a couple of traditional Hawaiian holiday songs with us and play the ukulele. And, you know, so it's a world music thing.
Something tells me Meli Kalikimaka.
Exactly. Good guess.
I'm sure there's others.
The second halves of both shows, the Charlie Brown reenactment, the Charlie Brown Christmas special is just so darn charming.
Well, let's talk about that.
It's brought to life beautifully with dancers and child actors and a couple of singers. And the dancers kind of dance the way the characters did in the cartoon. And the score, the Giraldi score is just, if you love mellow jazz, it's as good as it gets.
It's really,
and,
really something.
Never. Ba-dum, ba-dum, bum, bum. Who doesn't know that melody? It's the first piano solo my daughter learned in her piano lessons.
Never gets old.
It doesn't. You
and
just
in fact,
sit there
and
smile.
It's 51 years old this year. Do you believe it? 1965 was when it was.
Exactly. Of course, you and I are way too young to have seen the original special. But nevertheless, fully orchestrated.
My diapers
though.
Might have gotten wet during it.
Exactly. Fully orchestrated for the full San Francisco Symphony, but retaining that just perfect charm of the jazz trio original.
Mm-hmm. So we'll see the projection of the whole thing
in
the background.
You see the projection, on huge screen of excerpts from the original special, but it's brought to life live with dancers and actors. And audiences just go nuts for it. Mm. It's charming. It's so well choreographed. It's so well danced. It's the full San Francisco Symphony behind. I'm just so proud to do it. This is our third season doing it. And, look, Charles Schulz is a Bay Area guy.
Yes, yeah,
I mean, it's very homespun project.
We're one of the very few jazz musicians that has an airport named after him.
Exactly.
Well, not I mean cartoonist.
Cartoonist. Yeah, exactly. I knew what you meant.
You know what I meant.
Exactly.
But the Giraldi score never gets old. That's for
and
sure.
No, it's so well done.
So those performances are next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and
right.
Saturday, with matinees on Thursday and Friday. In addition to the evening performances, actually a double matinee on Friday at 11 and 2, Friday the 23rd.
Right. We've got some two-show days. It's easy. You can just Google San Francisco Symphony and get to our website, and all the information will come up. The other show that we're talking about is The Snowman.
Indeed.
Ruthie Ann is singing on the first half. Again, all your kind of holiday favorites, also featuring the San Francisco Symphony Chorus. But The Snowman, the Howard Blake score, beautiful, beautiful movie. Just a lovely, lovely Christmas story and a beautiful score.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the music from The Snowman.
It's kind of film music, artful film music, I would call it. It's real pretty. You're going to recognize those melodies.
I was going to say, very nice singing. Let's leave the singing to you at the end.
Let's
Ruthie
do that,
Ann Miles.
Thanks. Now you know why I'm a conductor. There you go. It's one of those things where, you're going to smile all the way through the first half with Ruthie Ann, all your holidays, Santa Claus is coming to town, that kind of stuff. And The Snowman is just so moving and so beautiful.
Academy Award nominated
short film. I think it's 28 minutes or something
animated.
Like that. Animated, exactly. Mm-hmm. Perfect opportunity to bring the kids, bring the grandkids, and give them their first opportunity to hear a live symphony orchestra.
And that will be with the Pacific Boy Choir as well.
Pacific
all,
Boy
all
Choir
the more reason
as well,
to bring
exactly.
the kids to get them.
All the more reason to see some kids, very accomplished kids up there singing beautifully. you know, open the door to this amazing art form, to your kids, to your grandkids.
When did you first work with Ruthie Ann Miles?
This will be my first time.
Fantastic.
In fact, this is one of her earliest experiences singing with a symphony. Not bad starting out at the top. I mean, she is a Tony winner, but I'm actually meeting her for the first time in about an hour and a half.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Those performances are already on Friday for The Snowman, featuring also Ruthie Ann Miles with the Pacific Boy Choir. Friday at 4, Saturday at 2, and Sunday a double whammy at 11 and 2. Again, more information at sfsymphony.org. Randall, tell me about the work with your three other orchestras. My goodness.
Well, all three are thriving, I'm happy to say. I'm also very proud that I have a big rock and roll project, which is about to tour, called Rocktopia. We shot a PBS special that was just broadcast here in San Francisco a couple of days ago. I'm a big fusion guy. I always want to reach out to new audiences. But, you know, it's crisscrossing North America, as I like to say, from Anchorage all the way to New York.
Wow.
You can't really get much further. I suppose Miami would be further. But I'm very proud that all three of my orchestras are doing well, reaching out in a not dissimilar way to the way the San Francisco Symphony does, and, you know, finding other ways, other genres to attract new audiences.
Very nice.
That's really what these shows are all about, bringing new folks to the concert hall.
Sure. And once again, the Snowman is this weekend, featuring Ruthie Ann Miles and the Pacific Boy Choir. And then next week, another Christmas spectacular featuring a Charlie Brown Christmas Live, Wednesday through Saturday, with lots of opportunities and times that will be convenient for all. sfsymphony.org. Thanks so much for coming in, Randall. I look forward to catching some of this, but there's really so much more to come in addition to the works that you're involved with at the Symphony. Also at Davies in the days ahead, performances of The Messiah, conducted by Patrick Dupre Quigley, Sweet Honey in the Rock on the 23rd, and our friend Edwin Outwater brings Academy Award actors Titus Burgess and Jane Krakowski together for the San Francisco Symphony annual New Year's Eve concert. Randall, thanks for coming.
Nice to meet you, David. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to hearing more of your work in the months ahead.
My pleasure.
More information at sfsymphony.org. Catch the unique version of A Charlie Brown Christmas Live at the San Francisco Symphony with Randall Craig Fleischer as music director, along with live actors, the classic 1965 cartoon being screened in the background, and Ruthie Ann Miles as a featured soloist with the Pacific Boy Choir with some holiday favorites. Great times at San Francisco's Davies Symphony Hall, sfsymphony.org, for a little bit more information.
It's true. It's true. The Crown has made it clear. The climate must be perfect all the year. A law was made a distant moon ago here. July and August cannot be too hot. And there's a legal limit to the snow here in Camelot. The winter is forbidden till December, and exits March the 2nd on the dot. By order, summer lingers through September,
in Camelot. An odd tune to be having during the holiday times, Mr. Richard Burton in the classic performance of Camelot. Peter Robinson to explain why that particular piece of music was chosen for today's show. Hi, Peter.
Hi, David. Yeah, good to be here. And I've just seen Jackie, the documentary, the true story, the fictional story, the everything put together, follow-up of the days that immediately followed President Kennedy's assassination, that fatal day on November the 22nd, 1963. And at the heart of this film is Natalie Portman, and she does just a wonderful portrayal, a really magnificent portrayal of Jackie Kennedy, simply in that period which immediately followed, as I said, the assassination. This is the first English script by Pablo Larraín, and he sort of tells the story, but he does use some flashbacks. And the essence of his story is based on the Theodore White interview, which first appeared in Life magazine, which was actually interviewed at Hyannis Port simply a week after the assassination. So we're definitely back in the early 60s. We're back in the year 1963. And this mosaic portrait really shows what Jackie Kennedy's struggle was when it came to competing with, first of all, the Johnson future presidency, and then the kind of core of diplomatic performances that follow a funeral. And I think this is a very interesting turning point in terms of presidential history, not simply because of the sad death, but because of the role that presidential wives play. One particular scene is set in the White House as Jackie Kennedy is taking visitors on an art tour. And you see straight away that she is interested in preserving the past. Jack's Kennedy legacy must be preserved. And she wants to capture more than the so-called beautiful people, the people who we've just heard sung about in Camelot. The other interesting thing about the film is that it does capture all the key events, the killing, the trip to the hospital, the flight out of Dallas when Lyndon Johnson takes the oath, and then, of course, we have the pink dress and the pillbox hat. And then a particularly dramatic episode in the shower when she's shedding away her husband's blood, which has actually stained both her hair, her face, and the dress. It's then that the First Lady really goes into action, comforting her two young children, stalling the Johnson desire to hustle her out of the White House, and then organizing a funeral march through the streets of Washington, D.C., which is set to really rival Abraham Lincoln's funeral. So if you're looking for what I call a piece of social history, if you're looking for a character and a characterization and something which is really different to many of these Hollywood bios, Jackie, now playing at the Embarcadero here in San Francisco, starring Natalie Portman, is one of my top tips for the year. It's partly shot in grainy 16mm, which I think gives an authentic feel to it. We have many close-ups where Jackie's face is like raw in front of the camera. But I see this as being one of my Oscar tips for the year. The movie, I think, involves you in the audience in a way that either a television drama or a glossy picture about the White House and Camelot may not. This is intense, and I think its intensity comes from special little moments, not least of all the private talks that Jackie has with the Catholic priest, played by John Hurt, as she discusses the intimate problems of her marriage. And I think, again, what we're getting is time to reflect, time to understand, and above all, time to remember. I thought we might finish with a tune. It's called September Song, It is actually listed as Jack Kennedy's favorite piece of music. So along with Moon River, here comes September Song.
I played me a waiting game. If a maid refused me with tossing curves, I let the old earth take a couple of wolves. And as time came around, she came my way. As time came around, she came. Oh, it's a long, long time from May to December. But the days grow short when you reach September. When the autumn weather turns the leaves to flame, one hasn't got time.
Chairman of the Board himself, and a tune that was a favorite of John Kennedy's. Do See Jackie, a wonderful portrayal by Natalie Portman. What else you got for us, Peter?
Now I've finally caught up with The Entertainer. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that it's coming. It's also playing at the Embarcadero. And this is a play which first was written in 1957 by John Osborne. He is part of that group of playwrights they used to call the Angry Young Men. And I think it's a very interesting flashback in history. It was following the Suez expedition, and some people see it as the demise of the British Empire, the sun finally setting. And what I think John Osborne does metaphorically in this particular play, The Entertainer, he takes a vaudeville artist, Archie Rice. I saw the original when Laurence Olivier played him. And he is the sort of comedian that you would see at a pier in a seaside resort. And today, it is played by Kenneth Branagh. And Kenneth Branagh, to some extent, I think, is reenacting some of the great roles that Laurence Olivier actually performed. For example, he played Henry V about 5 years ago. And then he also appeared as Laurence Olivier himself in My Week with Marilyn, a really thrilling story based on The Prince and the Showgirl. So The Entertainer is the story about the end of music hall as we used to know it. And some of the crits have remarked that the chorus girls, who should have been a little older, a little more faded, looked as though they'd just come from the gym. They'd been having a meditation and yoga class. But they kick out the rhythm, and some of the jokes, the early jokes in The Entertainer, are very reminiscent of the type of humour you would find at that particular period. A second thing I think worth remembering is that John Osborne really pushed the so-called angry young men philosophy to the hilt. And I say that because what we are seeing is the end of the kind of Noel Coward comedy of manners. This is not people sitting around a dinner table complaining about the servants or asking for another martini. This is gritty, down to earth. And at the time, it caused quite a revolution from London's theatre world. They've not updated the script, but it's peculiarly reminiscent of the times in which we're going through. And the blast, for example, against the Poles and the Irish is kind of reminiscent of where the immigration situation is at the moment. Now, let me finish by saying two things. The Entertainer is a title that may confuse you in the sense that it is entertaining, but it is a tough play to sit through. It's bleak. England at the end of the empire. And I think the second point, and this is particularly helpful if you're going to see it at the Embarcadero, do arrive on time, because there is a 4 to 5 minute intro by a person who's actually called John Osborne. He's not John Osborne at all. He's a young playwright. And I think it gives you a historic context about what music hall was like in the late 1950s and how a visit to the seaside resort really meant something special for people who may not go to the theatre for the other 50 weeks of the year. They had 2 weeks holiday, and I think that's what John Osborne has been trying to capture. So the movie's called The Entertainer. It stars Kenneth Branagh. It also, for those who remember, has Daisy from Downton Abbey appearing in it, and it is currently playing at the Lark in Marin County and also here at the Embarcadero in San Francisco. Now, this time of year, I'm still in that area, which I'm going to call Christmas, and I did mention briefly The Nutcracker. I think this is a show that all the family would enjoy. The Nutcracker here at the San Francisco Ballet really falls into two sections. The first is the storytelling, and then the second is the dancing or the ballet. And I think it's a great way to introduce young people to the music of Tchaikovsky. There are a number of classic scores here where I found myself humming along, and the dancing, particularly in the second half, is outstanding. So that's the San Francisco Ballet actually happening for the next 2 weeks at the San Francisco Ballet, The Nutcracker.
sfballet.org for performance times.
And I finally want to finish just with a couple of thoughts about what I call the festive season, because being politically correct, some people get jumpy around the phrase Merry Christmas, and I have suggested Yuletide as an option. And when I mention this, people have said, well, what exactly is that? Well, it doesn't come from the German. It covers the whole period from December the 17th to December the 23rd. It's also includes the winter solstice. It comes initially from the Romans, who got out there and started celebrating the fact that the nights were dark and you needed to celebrate. But for other people, I'm putting out a challenge this week. And the challenge, and I'm going to give you one verse of poetry, and anybody who wants to complete the poem can send it to Sam Franlitt, SamFranlitt at AOL.com. The poem, and this is only the verse, because we're here on public radio, we don't want to upset or offend people. 'Twas the night before Christmas, not a sound in the house, nothing moved, not even a mouse. Then down Hillary's chimney came a great lump. Hello, he said, I'm Donald Trump. Then Bill rose from his bed and said with a leer, I don't care who you are. Get out of here. So anyhow, we're going to throw that out. That's how it begins, the night before Christmas. And what we are looking for is four consecutive verses. Email them to samfranlitt@aol.com, and we will broadcast them as a celebration for the new year.
I've got a couple ideas myself, Peter. Thank you for that. And happy Christmas to you.
To you too.
Well, you mentioned the classic San Francisco Ballet production and the classical Tchaikovsky score. This time of year, I always like to offer the Duke Ellington take on the Tchaikovsky suite. Here is his classic recording of The Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy, which he calls Sugar Rum Cherry. Ellington, Billy Strayhorn take on Tchaikovsky's classic Nutcracker, Sugar Rum Cherry, his interpretation of the dance of the Sugar Rum, Sugar Plum Fairy. That's Open Air for this week. Once again, tongue-tied David LaTulip, your host for Open Air. You can send show suggestions to me, david@kalw.org. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. Thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. Do stay tuned next week for another edition of the radio magazine about the performing arts here in the Bay Area, Open Air.